And welcome back to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lovallo, and we are joined in studio by Bernard Cavalier. We told you about Express Strategies and also his website, ctbythenumbers.info and ctbythenumbers.news. And Bernard, welcome to Front and Center.
Thanks, Dan. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
And you've had a varied career. You started out in the broadcasting industry. You worked in government for a considerable period of time. How about providing a background for our audience?
Sure. In the last century, as I refer to it, I did start out as a journalist, both in radio news, not at this station, but in radio news, and also doing some sports writing for a now-defunct paper. So my career started with a now-defunct paper and a now-defunct radio station, which tells you something about something, hopefully not me. But learned early on how curiosity can unearth some interesting things, and worked for many years as a local radio news director, and then moved over to government, had an opportunity to work in public relations. At the time, I said, well, I'll try this for 6 months, and then I'll go back to news. And 30 years later, I wandered back into the news business through the Connecticut by the Numbers website.
And talk a little bit about just working in government and perhaps what we, the public, don't know. There seems to be such disconnect, particularly in this day and age.
You know, what's interesting, and I worked for many years doing public relations work in government. There are a lot of incredibly dedicated people who work every day diligently to make things better for people, whether they work in economic development, whether they work in social services. And often the story just doesn't get out there for a whole host of reasons. And the connections between public policy and public relations is sort of the space where I lived for many years. There are some really good stories to tell. And the decisions that government makes can have an impact, good or bad, on people's businesses, on people's lives. I think that's evident now. We've seen that in the cuts that the state has made in recent weeks and recent months, in recent years for that matter, can have an impact. So part of what I did when I was working for government was to try to make those connections and tell those stories, to let people know that here's what government is doing, but also to listen to help the folks that I was employed by at the time listen to what people were saying, listen to what businesses wanted, listen to what individuals were looking for in their transportation systems, depending, where I was. It's got to be a two-way street, and I think sometimes people lose sight of that. And again, when you look at what I've now done in recent years in my career, part of the drive behind Connecticut by the Numbers is to share that information, is to help that two-way street, to let government know, to let people know some of what's happening in Connecticut, good, bad, and otherwise.
What inspired you to produce the website, which, again, and you talk about Connecticut by the Numbers, but I guess the URL is CT by the Numbers, right?
Right. It's ctbythenumbers.news. Really, the drive for me was, threefold. One was to go back to my roots a little bit as a journalist. I think once a journalist, always a journalist. I think that's obvious when you listen to Front and Center as well. There's a desire to take things that are happening and let people know about them. And sometimes you got to dig a little bit to get there, but there's some interesting things happening. So part of the reason for the website was that. Secondly, having been in government for many years, there's so many government reports that are, produced meticulously and then sit on a shelf somewhere and nobody knows they were there. But sometimes they say some interesting things about what is happening and what ought to be happening, what could be happening in Connecticut. So I knew, if I started a website, I knew what I was looking for a little bit, and I could do some research and poke around. The Internet makes that easier than ever. And unearth some of those nuggets and say, well, let's shine a light on this aspect of Connecticut where maybe folks weren't as aware of that. So that was the second part of it. I think the third part that drove me was I've done some work with nonprofit organizations through the years, both when I was reporting and through government, where we worked with a lot of nonprofits. There are nonprofit organizations in Connecticut, many of which are supported mightily by Connecticut businesses, that are doing just some incredible things. And again, it's so hard for them to get attention for what they're doing. So part of it was, if I can do a story occasionally on a nonprofit organization or an individual or a small business doing something that has some meaning and has some impact in Connecticut, that's part of the fabric of life here, why not? So those, I think, were the three motivations that got me started on the website.
You know, just as an aside, I don't know if you saw the story today, how the Hartford Foundation stepped up and is offering $1 million to numerous nonprofits in Connecticut who got hit by the budget cuts.
Yeah, I mean, the Hartford Foundation's a perfect example of just a tremendous organization that does excellent work. They've issued some terrific reports that I've reported on in Connecticut by the Numbers, their progress report a year ago. That's just a sense of the phenomenal things that are happening in Connecticut. And people do pitch in, organizations do pitch in to help, and that's a prime example.
Now, how do you decide the stories that go on the website?
Dumb luck. Really, I like the variety of it. I mean, the website is not focused on one particular subject, and I think on any given day, someone who looks at the site may be interested in that day's story, and maybe not, but that's fine. I try to do a mix of business stories, transportation stories, healthcare stories, focusing on students who do something interesting. That may even some sports. Today's story was about, you know, a young lady gymnast from New Milford who made the junior national gymnastics team, the only one from Connecticut. That may not interest some people, but for others it's like, gee, she could be on the Olympic team 4 years from now. So I try to have a variety. And have different stories that will interest different people. And so it's like turning the papers, the pages of a newspaper in the old days. Sometimes you stumble into something that you weren't looking for, but you're interested by once you see it.
Well, and then you had the story on yesterday's website about the big exhibit about Hartford's manufacturing history, which will be on display at the Smithsonian tomorrow.
Yes, and I really stumbled into that. It's interesting. The way that story started was, there was an artist doing an exhibit at the Connecticut State Capitol on the bicycle industry in Connecticut, starting with Pope and in those years. And she did it with cut paper, which was, I'd never seen this before. This was really interesting. I talked with her for a while, and I was planning on doing a story about her work and the bicycle industry. And in researching that story, I noticed something on the Smithsonian website. And then I noticed there was something happening on Wednesday, focusing specifically on Hartford, and they were going to feature parts of their collection that hadn't been out there before, which then led me to broaden the story to talk about both and talk about the manufacturing history in Connecticut, in Hartford particularly.
Right. I mean, it really is fascinating, and again, I direct people to your website, ctbythenumbers.news or ctbythenumbers.info. People might not even know the ending, .info.news, but talk a bit about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I started the site, obviously most people go to .com instantly. .com was taken. But .info was available. I said, well, this site, I'm hoping, will provide good information, so info makes sense, and I'll try that. And then just about a year ago, a number of different endings for URLs were added, and .news was one of them. I said, well, at this point, it's a news site, so let's add the .news. So I'm transitioning from .info to .news, but since I provide both news and information, I think they both work.
Well, what do you think in general terms about the major change that the media is undergoing, and we see how traditional outlets like newspapers and radio and television are feeling the brunt of that?
Yeah, it's really significant, and, you know, as someone who's been in and out and back in the journalism field, I wouldn't say it's a tragedy. That's too strong given what's going on in the world today. But it's unfortunate that journalism is contracting the way it is. There's much more information out there, but a lot of it is an echo chamber, and a lot of it is people find what they're looking for. And part of what I think made journalism interesting previously was you had more of a range of views and opinions that you'd wander into. Now you can ignore everything else and just focus on what you want. And in some ways, Connecticut, the opportunity Connecticut by the Numbers and other similar websites have in Connecticut and elsewhere is people are looking for other information, other news than the narrow sites that they have. So journalism's changing. It's not an easy task. For the traditional journalists who are out there every day doing this, for me, this is half of what I do, not all of what I do. I give them tremendous credit. I read everything that's out there, in print and online a lot, and learn a lot every day. But it's tougher and tougher, and unfortunately smaller and smaller. The number of reporters is shrinking dramatically. And well, part of it, you know, I was thinking back to the nonprofits. I mean, for a nonprofit organization to try to get something in the newspaper is exceedingly difficult because there just aren't as many reporters to report those things. Right. There aren't as many pages to put it on, whether it's pages on, you know, in hard copy or on the web. It's just tougher.
I have to level with students who come to me and ask me about the field of radio and television and newspapers. What do you tell them?
Well, if you can follow your passion, I never tell people not to do that. But it's uphill, and you have to be creative about it. I mean, as someone who started in broadcasting, I still believe in the field tremendously. But you sometimes have to look at it differently. Like, your show is an example where you not only do the radio broadcast live on the air, but you have the podcast. So people can get that information in other ways. And I think that's a lot of the future of broadcast media, is how else can we package what we've done live on the air to make it more accessible to people in the ways in which they like to receive information today. And that is changing.
Because in many respects, people want their programming on demand.
Yes, that's very true. And I think the way in which we use media and use technology is changing. And the news media and broadcast media have to keep up with that. And they're trying desperately to keep up with that.
Talk a bit about Express Strategies.
Sure. Express Strategies is the other half of my life, where I started. It's basically a public relations and advocacy writing business, where I work with a range of clients. This is totally separate from Connecticut by the Numbers, where I work with clients who are interested in getting their message out. And it's public relations and media relations, advocacy writing, where I think what I bring to clients that I work with, and I work with education clients, small business clients, nonprofit organizations, some government agencies, is the connection between public policy and the public and public relations. So I work with a client, for example, on everything from content for their website to articles they're looking to have published in newspapers that explain what they do, to crisis communications where they have to encounter media in a situation, not necessarily of their liking, but they need to get through it. How to handle that, how to work that situation, having been on all sides of that coin at various points in my career. So I think I add value to the conversation with the leadership team of a business of how do you position yourself and how do you respond in challenging situations.
You know, we talked about the media on one hand just before. On the other hand, what we have is a 24/7 media today. And so consequently, we have news stories that require someone who needs crisis management because of some sort of public relations fiasco, some sort of public relations nightmare. How do you handle a situation like that?
Well, it's true, and it doesn't even have to be a dramatic crisis. It can just be something where a reporter needs some information for a story they're working on, but given the nature of instant media today, they need it right now. It's not like years ago when you could say, well, let me check it out, and I'll call you back in the morning, and they say, fine, that'll be great. I mean, now it's, I need it in the next, 30 seconds if you can get it to me that fast. So part of it is just being responsive. You need to understand what the reporter needs and what they're looking for. They're not looking to make your life more difficult. They're just looking to fulfill their need and do their job. And I understand that. So in working with clients in that situation, having them understand the media is not the enemy. They're not looking to get you. They're looking to provide accurate information. So that's what we try to do. My recommendation to clients is, be straight from the get-go. Get them the information they need. Obviously, if you have a point of view, you can share that. You have every right to do that. They need it quickly. I mean, that's just the way the world works now.
Well, do you get some reluctance on the part of the clients who say, I don't want to tell them that?
Well, yes, sometimes. And when I worked in government, I had those moments as well. But again, I think, part of what I did then and do now is to just say, put yourself in those shoes. You need to, the reporter's writing the story one way or the other. You might as well give him accurate information or her accurate information to put in that story. Otherwise, they'll put in what everybody else says, and your voice won't be there. So if you want to be included in that story and get your point across, sooner beats later, just about every time. You need to be accurate. You don't want to be so fast as to give inaccurate information. But better to be in the story from the beginning than to be playing catch-up, because you never quite catch up.
What would you tell, and I'm not asking for any particular presidential candidate, but the candidates who are out there during this the election year, from a public relations standpoint, what would you tell them?
This year, I don't know that I would say anything or come even close.
All the rules have been broken.
And I think we'll continue to be as we go through July in the conventions. It's a whole new world out there. Yeah.
I would imagine, though, that for a lot of these public relations businesses, it's got to be a boon for them.
On the one hand, it's a boon. On the other hand, I think they're shaking in their boots a little bit. You know, when presidential campaigns are driven by 140-character tweets, it's a world we haven't quite been in before.
How do you counteract that from a public relations standpoint? The fact that you're dealing with social media, the fact that you got some people who can be there for good or bad own public relations agents.
Well, I think you need to be in the media where everyone else is. I mean, whether it's a campaign or whether it's a business, if someone is saying something about your business, you need to respond. You need to respond quickly. You need to respond to the same media where the charge has been made. That goes to everything from customer service to a political campaign. Again, quickly, factually accurate, and respond in the same medium. So if someone's tweeting something about your business or about you, or you want to be able to respond in a calm, clear, concise, factual manner. And you want to be consistent. So if someone sees a tweet about something and says, geez, that sounds kind of odd, I can't believe they're really doing that, and they go to your website, you want to have the website give those answers and be very clear, because that's how you present yourselves. Whatever medium, whether it's through a tweet or through a website or through an email, that's how you present yourselves, and that's how people take in all that information and then they make their decisions.
I mean, a lot of these businesses have people on their payroll whose job is to specifically handle the social media aspect.
Yes,
right?
Years ago there were no vice presidents of Twitter. But again, you know, things evolve and things change, and I think that's how people get information. It might as well be yours, because if it isn't yours, it's somebody else's.
Yeah. This is just fascinating stuff, talking about Express Strategies and also CTByTheNumbers.news. What do you think it's going to be like just a few years down the road?
I gave up predicting a long time ago, Dan. I think the pace of change will continue to increase. We see how quickly technology changes. But again, people's basic need to know information. That's what really drives this. You know, whether you're pulling out your smartphone in a retail store to compare prices or compare quality, or you're looking to find out the latest news in your community or about an organization you're considering contributing to, people still want to make an informed decision generally. I think that's still true. So I think even as technology changes, we need to find ways to get that information in people's hands. Today it's literally in people's hands. And I think that's what drives my approach to both journalism and my communications consulting business.
That, by the way, was going to be my next question. We talk about the traditional media and the challenges traditional media faces today. But that said, are we, do you think, a more informed or a less informed society?
I think both. Which may sound kind of odd, but we certainly have access to much, much, much more information. But sometimes we tend to restrict how much of it we give ourselves access to because of our own beliefs. And I think that is unfortunate and limiting. And I think the degree to which we can sort of break beyond that and take advantage of the range of views and take them initially at face value and then do additional research. Because you can research things much more easily. You don't need to go places other than leaving your desktop or your handheld device. So many people have much more information, but I think some people choose not to take advantage of the opportunities to find out more.
How do we as individuals manage to keep separate a healthy skepticism versus just cynicism? How do we separate that?
Well, you just summed up what a reporter is in a nutshell. You can do both, and I think both are cynicism's not a bad thing and often isn't wrong, but I think you need to inform yourself and make that informed judgment and work through the cynicism to determine, were you right to be cynical or were you not? And I think admitting of, you know, I didn't think that was the case, but, you know, okay, turns out it is. I've done sufficient research. I've looked at enough places that feel objective to me that I can make a decision that either I was right or not. You know, more information is a good thing.
But then we have, and it seems to be the conversation these days, we're told anyway, a more polarized society. Is that the result of we're just looking for opinions that validate our beliefs, or do we have a healthy skepticism that enables us to make an informed decision?
Well, I think there's a dichotomy there. I mean, oftentimes people do limit what they look at. And that, to me, that's goes beyond skepticism. You know, skepticism is sort of being wary of things, which is, I have no problem with that at all. That's, you know, that's not a bad place to start from my view. But I think when it goes to the point where you won't even look or won't even consider or automatically discount other views or other information, I think that's when we get into some of the challenges that we now have before us in society.
What have been, and you've been doing this for 4 years, so a lot of stories have come across your website. What have been some of your favorite stories?
Oh, you know, the range of stories is everywhere. I mean, I just in looking back at some of the stories that I've done, even in the last few months, you know, looking at Connecticut government, state residents' confidence in government in Connecticut is the third lowest in the country right now. Just 3 years ago, 6 in 10 residents had confidence in government. That's a dramatic change. That says something. 9 in 10 Connecticut residents have a usual source of medical care, but 3 in 10 haven't seen a doctor in the past year. So they could, but they're not. And that has health implications, which has cost implications. So there, you know, there are a variety of stories like that. I mean, one that I worked on a couple weeks ago, which I think I may get back to again, is many towns in Connecticut are switching over their streetlights to LED lighting.
It's a great story, by the way.
And it's fascinating. The American Medical Association put out a paper recently that said there are some serious health concerns because of the difference in lighting and the impact it has on our melatonin. I'm no expert.
Right.
But UConn, in fact, has an expert that I interviewed. And despite that AMA paper, so far, towns are still making these changes. So that, to me, is interesting. I mean, and the reason the towns are making these changes is it saves them money, and it's more environmentally safe. But they apparently haven't considered the adverse health impacts. And for the AMA, which is a relatively conservative organization, to come out and raise those questions to me is quite interesting, and we'll see where that goes. And there are a variety of other things, you know, the concussion issue in sports,
right?
Football, but not only football is interesting. So one of
and
the
you had that on your website.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, Sacred Heart University is doing a study now of lacrosse players and concussion injuries, and they've tracking them over a number of years. And depending what happens there, we may see that study having implications well beyond Sacred Heart, well beyond Connecticut. So there, you know, there are a lot of interesting things. I keep coming back to the word interesting. You know, to different people, they may be more or less interesting, but I think there are things that you can see about Connecticut and things happening in Connecticut that may have implications well beyond our borders.
How do we, because you mentioned before, and I agree, the internet is a great thing, but how are we able to separate fact from fiction, because there's a lot of fiction on the internet?
Well, I think people have their own radar at the end of the day, and if something doesn't feel right, it often isn't. Going back to the skepticism you talked about, you know, someone once said, if it's in print, it must be true. That's not true on the internet as well as in hard copy. I think people, if something doesn't feel right, poke around some more. Look at other sources, consider other things. And, you know, Connecticut by the Numbers is one place to look. God knows there are many others. And there's some terrific websites in Connecticut and terrific traditional publications in Connecticut. And some websites with data and other information, government produced and otherwise. And to the extent that people are interested, look around. The facts are out there.
We're a nation that loves numbers, aren't we?
I think we are, yeah. Yes. Despite the fact that most people struggle through math, I think we are. And I think, you know, you have to be careful with that. You know, it's like with pollsters or numbers. They can be tweaked in one way or another. But I think, you know, go to the preponderance of evidence rule. I think looking at graphs and charts and numbers and what they tell you, comparisons with other states or comparing counties in Connecticut, comparing cities, it tells a story. It's a mosaic worth looking at, and that's part of what I try to do.
Bernard, thanks very much for joining us in studio today.
Thanks, Dan. A pleasure.
That is going to do it for Front and Center. Again, our guest, Bernard Cavalier. Visit his website, ctbythenumbers.news.